Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I admire your tenacity to still be here at this time on a very heavy scheduled day. I would like to think you're all stopping to hear our panel discussion, but I expect it's the tanker markets you're more interested after us. But we'll try to keep you entertained in the meantime. I'm joined on the panel. I should say I'm not going to stand at the lectern because there's only three of us and there's safety in numbers if we sit together. So I'm going to moderate from the table here. So there's three of us. There's myself, Andreas, and Yuri. My CV and Andreas is in the brochure, so I won't spend time sort of running through those. But basically, I'm from a classification society. We have a ship manager and we have a ship owner. And Yuri is from the National Company of Kazakhstan. So if you'd just like to, as your CV is missing from the brochure.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Yuri Borodulin, and I'm managing director of the UK office of a company called Kazmor Translot. Very difficult to pronounce. KMTF is much easier. We are a national company of the Republic of Kazakhstan, ship owners in our own rights. We are own and operate crude oil tankers, Aframaxes, and product tankers. Trading area is Mediterranean, Black Sea, continent, and Caspian Sea. Before joining KMTF in 2008, I spent 17 years working in the ships London, and then before used to work for Blasco Black Sea Shipping Company in Odessa. In the shipping, unfortunately, still 1983. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Yuri. I'm just going to go through a few PowerPoint slides just to sort of introduce the overall subject of sort of cost optimization in shipping for those of you who don't have a detailed knowledge of how a shipping company's OPEX budgets are put together. So basically, when you're optimizing financial performance, at the moment, you know, the market is in a fairly bad situation, which we've heard all day today. Similarly, we've heard about financial assistance, restructuring, all about helping companies survive. But also, companies can do something themselves in about optimizing their cost. And basically, they need to sort of focus on the sort of the improvement areas. What have they got room to maneuver in? Quite often, there's been a lot in this industry about quick wins. But trouble with those sometimes is they're not sustainable. And also, they need to agree what is an acceptable level of operational performance. We could save a fortune with ships if we slow steamed all the time. We didn't do this, we didn't do that. But then the operators, the charterers, the various other people in the process expect a certain standard to be maintained. And then obviously we need to maintain the technical performance to manage costs. If we look at the fleet management process and we're talking about cost savings, there are numerous sort of parts of the OPEX budget, basically sort of nine individual sort of elements. And what I've tried to do here is I've grouped them. There's the organization and the leadership, and this is what we're going to be discussing in a little while. There's maintenance, docking, procurement, the OPEX, the budget management, energy management, and project management. These are areas where cost optimization can occur. I've put the box on crewing in green because frequently the idea of cost optimization in a lot of companies is let's go for the lowest common denominator crew, reduce crewing cost, because they're always seen as something that can be controlled. But in reality, quite often, they're false economies. If you start cutting cost on crewing, then you have some problem. And then we've got the quality, health, and safety. Andreas, I don't know if you've got anything to add at this point, or we'll just...
I think the slide, the different companies would perhaps split the boxes slightly different, but basically this is what it is. These are the areas that people are looking into when it comes to managing the supply chain generally and the costing of a shipping company.
You'll notice I haven't put any box around the quality, health, safety and environment. Reputational damage can be massive for some of these companies. And anything that can lead to safety incidents, emergency preparedness and these sort of things aren't areas to be focused on as far as cost optimization. Now, my company has done a number of projects in this field, and some of the pitfalls we see in cost optimization is the struggle to implement. People struggle to look at the long-term future. You might have to invest a small amount to save going forward in the future. And some of these hinder implementation within the company. So this is one pitfall that we see in cost optimization. Similarly, we also see large organizations, they start on cost savings, cost initiatives. You get lots of different departments, lots of areas looking at sort of saving cost and what they can do about this. We also get the problem within the company of different drivers, people who from the commercial side of the organization are looking at their responsibility to the cargo, the shipper, and then people on an operational side. So quite often, again, we see this patchwork of systems as a pitfall. And then also, we've also seen a lot of companies who spend a lot of time and a lot of effort on implementation, you know, coming up with new cost-saving initiatives. But then they actually fail to sort of move them forward. They get paper-based savings. For me, the only cost optimization you can ever really account for in a company is something that the accountant tells you, not necessarily the operational staff tell you. Because you will have seen that over the industry, over the years, there have been lots of things that if you fit this, it will save X percent. If you do this, it will save Y percent. If you do something else, it will save Z percent. If you add up all of those percentages, most of the ships today would be operating at zero cost because they're not sort of cumulative. So from that point of view, as I say, it's following it on. So that was just a sort of a brief introduction, if you like, to the concept of cost saving and cost optimization. And I'm now going to my colleagues here. I shall try and speak less and let them speak more. So I'll just put up this slide to remind us of the fleet management process. And basically, Andreas, I was just... when we're talking about cost saving and organizational leadership, do you actually sort of recognize the sort of the need to do this, or are the operations suitable as they are?
Yeah. Well, an issue which is there in on the ship management side is always that you have a contract whereby you would agree a budget with the client. And usually you are measured against the budget. So the budget alone is, of course, an important element of the performance of the manager. However, the balance of quality is always questionable. So what we have seen lately is that the quality indicators as well are included in the management contracts, so that at least there is not only a cost element, but it's also a performance and asset value KPI as well into the equation. So assuming that the arrangement is been made with the owner and you have a defined budget and a defined quality requirement, then you have obviously ahead of you the plan with the client, how cost optimization would be achieved. And of course, we deal with different types of ships and different type of clients as well. So one should first see the client expectations and then define the way forward. Now, if we just concentrate on the cost element, which is a question, I would say that, first of all, you need the economies of scale. You need to have a sizable fleet so that you can approach your suppliers, your service providers, and achieve economies of scale to the best possible extent. It's not. It's clear that lately there have been companies joining, one joining the other, so that the fleet sizes get bigger. You have pools for purchasing, and even you have pools on crewing and so on. Therefore, there is a trend in the market to put things together. On this basis, all elements that they are included on the boxes on this slide are basically tackled in such a way that we optimize the costs.
Thank you. Yuri?
Well, basically, what Andrea told, it's our position as well. However, I would like to add probably one more point here. Requirements of the OKIMF, because nowadays, and I'm sure everybody here knows very well situation where is whatever its requirements of the class, of the flag, it's one matter, and requirements of oil major, it's slightly different. And I would say, my opinion, that nowadays, it's OKIMF today becoming more like a regulator who create its own regulations. And in that respect, we can talk about cost saving, efficiency, etc., but it's not always applicable because there are requirements, as I mentioned, apart from the class and flag, for the safety issues, for the condition of the vessel, which you cannot compromise in any way. Sorry, Stephen.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that, and I don't want to put you on the spot, Yuri, but you mentioned that controlling costs, because you have to complete with the class requirements, the flag requirements. You know, we've also just seen the ballast water management thing, which is going to add a huge cost to the industry over the coming 5 years, most probably, as everybody has to fit ballast water management system. But are you also sort of saying that some of the organizations, oil majors, OKIMF, who are there to encourage a safer environment might also be contributing to cost overruns?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. okay, and Andreas, you mentioned about setting a budget as a ship management. You come to an agreement. Is there, you know, being a cynic that I am, as a ship manager, you agree the budget, you've got the money in the bank. Is there a drive to, during the course of the year, to save on that? Or clients agreed he's going to pay you X, so we'll spend X, and then we can carry it over to the next year? And again, you can refuse to comment on that if you like.
Let me be cynic as well. Stephen, if you are, the budget is not a spending budget. Whoever sees a budget as a spending budget, it means the game is lost already. When one would look into the vessel's budget as such, the biggest cost category is crewing. So you could, if we take tankers, for example, which is a business that Yuri is into, you could. The lineup, the chosen lineup, has to be discussed with the client because perhaps you have a regional requirement, because you have a certain OKIMF arrangement on the trade of the vessel and so on. And a good crew is a good crew. But also there are nationality differences. So in general, the arrangement is found on the crew lineup, and then there is clearly an approach of defining the wages and then doing the crew changes and on the rest on the best possible ports. So crewing, which accounts for about 55-60% sometimes of the budget, is clearly defined and on an itemized basis even, so that the budget is confirmed. Now, when it comes to procurement items, and then you refer, for example, to regional costs as you pay at port, those are variable. But again, if you purchase at the best possible ports of the best of the vessel's trade, then again you are safe. Where it does make a difference is on the maintenance costs. And then you have to decide whether you would follow, for example, a very strict PMS system, or whether you would go for, let's say, condition-based maintenance. There's a perception that condition-based maintenance helps lower the cost because you don't pay extra money to the main engine manufacturers, for example. However, there is still a risk element in this equation as well. So you need to define how the client would prefer to manage the ship based on his own financial situation as well. And then as a manager, you need to give the advice what options are the best options for the specific ship. Not even a client, it goes down to the ship. So this is how it's been done. And then I could keep on talking about docking costs and so on, but perhaps we'll do it later. But generally, the budget is not a spending budget. The budget is a budget which is pre-agreed and defined, and it's expected that you do that. You basically run the budget below budget because the continuation of the relationship with a client is not one off 1 year. You need to continue. You need to keep the relationship. So that's the situation.
Okay, thank you. You mentioned about crewing being one of the largest elements of the OPEX budget, and obviously the next one which you just alluded to was maintenance, and one of the ideas is, as you rightly pointed out, moving towards condition-based maintenance rather than planned maintenance. In other words, you don't have to strip something down and do an overhaul of a generator if it's working well. Don't touch it unless it's broken, sort of thing. From an owner's perspective, Yuri, what's your thoughts on condition-based maintenance?
Thank you, Stephen. Actually, as a ship owners, we've already been a couple of times in a situation where we are trying to implement condition-based maintenance system. However, we found that in the long term, it cost us more. Because if, for example, very well, auxiliary generator got service interval in 20,000 hours, and you're doing in 30,000 very often, people saying, servicing company saying, no, you have to pay for 40,000 for next circle. We will not give any guarantee if you will do it on the basis of 20,000. And then in the end, when you budgeted certain amount, let's say $15,000, you're ending up of paying 23 or 25. So also there is a big risk with insurance. In case of any problem or in case of any claims, I'm sure people found immediately that you not look after your equipment according to the recommendation of the producer. So in that respect, sorry for being old-fashioned, but I think that condition-based maintenance, it is cost-effective in a very short period of time, but from the long and prospective point of view, it's not really so cost-effective. It's my opinion.
Thank you. Do you want to?
I don't know if I should debate with an owner, but basically the our experience is that, yes, indeed, if you follow a strict PMS system, which is based on the manufacturer's recommendation, this can be very expensive, especially with the prices of spare parts from manufacturers. So at the same time, if your condition-based management approach is done in such a way that you really concentrate on the items you have to concentrate, let's say main engine, two-stroke, that you can check, then it makes sense. But it doesn't make sense if you do it on a small pump and so on. So it really varies on That's our experience generally. And I definitely agree with Yuri with regards to insurance arrangements and so on. You need to be aligned with your insurers and you need to have a good record. So perhaps the optimum would be that you have a PMS, which is based on experience with sister ships, so that you can defer the overhauling hours and so on. So again, also it depends on the type of the ship. Yuri very rightly says, I'd rather do my maintenance today, because if he's running his Suezmax on a very good rate, he doesn't want to lose half a day. But if he were perhaps in bulk carriers, he would say, okay, I can afford the condition-based maintenance. So it really depends.
So I suppose in summary, what you're saying is yes and no. One size doesn't fit all.
Exactly.
There is a place for condition-based maintenance, and there's a place for planned maintenance. And again, the cynic in me is always sort of saying, you know, equipment manufacturers, I wonder if, the 10,000 or the 20,000 hours, you know, I know with my car, the manufacturer's state, it has to go in every 12 months, you know, for service, cost me a small fortune. And I've driven it maybe 4,000 miles during the year. So I think, you know, some of this area is an area where we can save. Again, when we're looking at big ticket items in operating costs, and all ships have to go into dry dock. It's a fact of life. The period obviously depends on what particular ship and what sort of trades. But generally speaking, at the moment, dry docking is, unless you're in the passenger ship industry or the ferries, dry docking is every 5 years. And one of the big costs in dry docking is unplanned work. If you run a dry dock company, it's your greatest wish for a company to arrive with a incomplete budget and keep going for additionals, because then you can push your costs up. So when it comes to docking management, how do you address that, Andreas, again, sorry, and then Muriel?
Well, what's very important is a timeline, so that you are able to plan the dry docking well in advance, and whenever possible, you can define the trading area depending how close you are with the commercial operator and so on. But in general, based on the assumption that we know the trading area of the ship, and therefore you have a range of possible dry docking areas, you can make sure that you prepare your specifications well in advance, send them to at least 3 or 4 shipyards so that you get your quotations, and make sure that the quotations are checked centrally, I would say. And we have reached a point whereby our dry dockings are, I would say, semi-subcontracted internally. We have a specific department which is involved with dry dockings, but we still believe the technical superintendent is the one who knows his ship best. So we have typically the negotiations taking place well ahead. You are able to achieve better discounts with a number of ships. So with a fleet size of about 300 ships, we dry dock on average 60 ships a year. So you have quite a good purchasing power with the yards. And when the ship is there, you should try to have at least 75% of the jobs already predefined and agreed, so that you avoid surprises. But of course, we should expect the irregularity. The typical dry docking team at the dry docking, and again, it still depends on the size of the ship. It would be the technical superintendent, an expert who has worked at shipyards before, perhaps a paint supervisor, a coating advisor, a naval architect, and an admin assistant, somebody that would support the team. So that's how the dry docking management has been done.
Okay.
From my side, I can share opinion with Andreas, especially for us, we are small ship owners, we do have 14 ships, and with 14 ships, we do not think that we really need to have dedicated docking management team. It's rather spend some money sending our superintendent for some courses for different training, to arrange training for them. Because again, I agree with Andreas that the person who knows vessel is the superintendent, is the best person. Whether you will agree with me or no, but I don't think that for us as a small ship owners, we need to keep and spend money, increase our administration cost for dedicated docking team.
Okay. Do either of you, I can't quite remember whether I heard it, but do either of you put a finance person in the dry dock team? You know, to keep a running check with the yard and because most superintendents I know who have gone to dry docks and then come back, they're not the world's best accountants.
Yeah.
And then when the bill comes in from the yard, there's normally quite a lot of negotiation.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. I mean, I referred earlier to negotiation well in advance.
Yeah.
And somebody who worked before at the yard. That would be typically a commercial entity on our side.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
In our organization, we run a system where it's technical people doing technical part of the job. And we do have commercial people who are doing commercial part of the job. And because we are running here all commercial activity for the group done from London, we run completely paperless system in the office, one platform where everybody can see what's going on, not only in when deal is done, on even on ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, our commercial people already seen what is discussing, what is the requirements for the job to be done. They're checking situation with third party, and it is always a chance to compare cost which quoted by shipyard and what we are getting from subcontractors, independently from the shipyard. And then decision is taken whether to accept whatever is done by proposed by shipyard or to invite subcontractors.
May I just ask you, Stephen, how do you see this with regards to your clients that you have and the companies that you see? How is everybody else doing it?
For us at the moment, this is quite a large area. We're working with some fairly large companies, and we found to date that there are significant savings to be made in the dry docking sort of process. Much of what Andreas has mentioned, you know, it's about negotiating the contract, making sure you're very specific about what you need to have done, the involvement of somebody to sort of manage the process. And to a certain extent, Yuri has mentioned, you know, with 13 ships, whereas Andreas with 300, you know, it's economy as of scales whether you can afford to do that. But within the organizations, there is money to be had. And it goes back to this, how far do you look forward? You have to invest in a little bit, but there is certainly a lot of the cost incurred during dry dock could be managed a lot better and reduced. And I suppose we've just talked about docking management and maintenance management. One of the other great words that goes around our industry is the grey spares market. This is fitting, it wasn't on the agenda, this is fitting of components not by the prime manufacturer. I didn't know if you had a view that you wished to share or not.
Okay, you have the regulatory requirements that you have to follow, so that's there's no question about it. But from time to time, you know, it's hard to convince an owner of a container ship which is 16 years old today that, you know, he has to go and purchase a new cylinder liner. You have to find the way of moving ahead as long as you are in class. And in general, we have to find a way to run the ships. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not black and white and then you go by the book and it's one thing what the textbook is writing, but it's the other thing how you run the ships.
Yeah.
And to a great extent, we have to find the optimum way of managing the ships according to the ship's type, age, owner's requirements, and so on. So that's my comment on this.
Well, from my point of view, yes, you can save money on a great spare parts, but then you will lose more money when your ship will idling due to main engine or another equipment failure or some incident with cargo pumps during cargo operations. So that's why our policy is, again, slightly old-fashioned, to buy only what is recommended by manufacturer.
All right, so I
think what is important to mention here is that you have to select your service providers very carefully. It's not just gray market spare parts. You have to know who is the seller, and you have to know, and you need to have some sort of experience with them. If you just go to any shop in, let's say, China, and you purchase a cylinder liner, then you are at a major risk. So you have to know really who is selling the spare parts, and quite a number of times you don't really have the original manufacturer selling, but you have the manufacturer of the manufacturer.
Okay.
So this is the best way to make sure that you get cheaper spare parts at a very good quality.
Okay, thank you. We've talked at the beginning a little bit about the OPEX budget, and Andreas mentioned, you know, that it's a guideline, it's what they've come to an agreement with the owner about what is going to be spent, and we had a discussion around that. But how do you actually know that your OPEX costs are in line with the market? How do you, you know, is your budget realistic? Is it? Of course it is. But you know, how do you benchmark it? Do you know it?
It's very simple. I'm sure everybody using OPCOST website run by Moore Stevens. It's a very simple tool. Just to check what other people doing and how run similar type of the ship. However, okay, it's just a benchmark, just an idea what's going on. For average vessel, you have to pay some attention to the difference between what's between average vessel and the vessel which you are on and run.
Well, I think that's a very easy question, in the sense that when you manage a very large fleet, you obviously deal with a lot of clients. So the clients, they do the benchmarks, and they will not accept the budget which they believe it's high. So by the pragmatics of the job, you liaise with the client and you make sure that the budget which has been agreed is competitive. Now, at the same time, of course, we benchmark ourselves with our clients, because many of our clients, they have managers for their other vessels. So you have an indirect comparison. But at the same time, we do benchmarking with companies that are very close to us. For example, in Greece, we have the joint venture with Tsagos, so we manage the ships where we manage the ships jointly. We constantly compare the budgets. We do this also with our competitors. There is one specific competitor that we are dealing with, so that we know where they stand, and this helps us improve. So in general, I can say that we're very happy not to have lost any clients, I would say, the last 4 years for any other technical ship manager, which shows that the budget performance as well as the quality performance are in line to what the clients expect.
Okay, thank you. And one final question for my panel. It's basically energy management for the last 5-10 years has been the everybody saying that this is the way to sort of save costs in ship operation, slow steaming, etc. With the oil price as it is today, is energy management dead in the water, or is it still a viable situation for cost optimization? Whoever wants it.
Well, energy management is, I mean, it was so sexy a few years ago. It was all about how do we save energy and how do we make sure that, you know, the ships, they run faster, and we make sure that we save the environment and so on. This has faded away a little bit, but this doesn't mean that the operators are not following this strictly. I mean, there is still savings to be made whenever on your weather routine. You have to follow the weather routine. You have to make sure your hull is clean. You have to make sure that the propeller is polished. You have to control the main engine performance and so on. So yes, it's not it's not the sexy word that it used to be, but still you have to make sure that there is an environmental, perhaps an energy officer within the company that measures the rates. And even though the market is bad, one should not forget that based on the performance, there is always a time charter characteristics of the ships. So the more you save, the more attractive the ship is with regards to the chartering of arrangements. So yes, it's something which is very important, and we're tackling this very carefully.
Yes, I agree with you, Andreas. However, I think that we should pay attention to the market realities as well. When you've got 11 to 13 ships idling in Mediterranean, I'm talking about Aframaxes without employment, and you've got the chances to go for good, not good for the deal, where you require to come to the port of loading in certain time, then you will do 14 knots at full speed, irrelevantly to the cost. Otherwise, you will stay without employment. What I'm trying to say, that's energy saving and management, it's good things, but unfortunately on present market, it's maybe it should be looked very careful.
Okay, thank you. One last question, yes or no. Is there potential for optimizing costs, reducing them? Yes or no?
Our house class society is DNVGL. There is always room to lower your fees.
Yuri?
Well, the same, yes.
Okay, so the way to reduce costs is for us to charge less. Okay, thank you very much. We have, if there's any questions from the floor. There's one here and two at the back.
John Falakas from All About Shipping. Some years ago, the optimum thing was to have the seafarers do both the jobs of running the ship and maintaining the ship and leave the minimal for the shipyards and for dry docks or whatever. To this effect, we've seen the opposite, reducement of the service on board, etc., and that raises the cost. What are you doing with these big fleets or small fleets to reduce the cost and employ well-paid seafarers to be capable of running the ship and maintaining the ship?
To employ good, professional, well-trained people and not save some peanuts on a cheap crew because whatever is coming cheap, at the end of the day, costs you more.
Yeah. That's absolutely correct. I would also add on this that a few years ago, there was not really any attention on the seafarer, at least on, let's say, on the large fleets and whatsoever. I know perhaps for a Greek ship owner with 10 or 20 ships, the owner of the company personally knew or still knows each captain and chief engineer and the people that are going on board, which is perhaps one of the successes of the Greek shipping community. At the same time, what we have seen the last years is that there's a trend in making sure that the seafarers are not only with MLC, but generally, are treated in a better way, in a better way. So what we have launched, for example, last year is a campaign that convincing all our clients that internet on board is necessary, always with limit, but this helps as well the motivation of the crew and so on. So there are measures taken continuously to make sure that the crew is being treated in the best possible way, because you definitely need happy crew so that they work on board, definitely.
But what you said, we're doing correctly, said that they pay more, better money, is we give us managers an incentive to be good seafarer, to carry on, and you avoid other expenses like transportation and so on, you know, which can lead to a false economy in the running of the ships and because of spares and you know,
yep. Yes. And we have two questions. Sorry, we have two more questions if we can just get them in for.
A big part of your OPEX is obviously bunker. And with the varying oil price, which tools from your experience help you to manage this cost? Do you see more advantage in buying spot, or are you seeing contracts as a better option, or bunker forward agreements? What is?
Well, for me, at present, cost for the bunkers, we prefer to deal on a spot market. Having say spot market, we are trying to buy, let's say, quite big volume for each particular bunkering, like let's say 900 to 1,000 metric tons. But we are not entering into any long-term contracts due to volatility of the prices and also present trend for the, let's say, for the reducing of cost of the bunkers. So we are working basically on a spot, and we are not planning in near future to change our philosophy, only if we will see that bunker prices will start rising up.
Okay, we have one more question. I'm afraid we're over time. We will be available.
Soren Garnagarian, CAS Business School. We didn't talk about technology, softwares that could optimize management and even commercial management. So as a big owner and a small owner, do you use technology in your optimization, and what kind of technology do you use?
Can you keep it very
software?
Brief?
Okay. Yes, we do. Again, selectively on certain clients. The most advanced technology we have is a client who has accepted to invest in sensor technology. So the sensors, through the sensor system, there is a link with the office, and you know exactly the performance of the engine and the main machineries on board the ship, and this can be measured. So this is, let's say, the most advanced system which is available.
Yes, we run our own, it's in-house design program, which is a link vessels and all department, technical and commercial, in our organization. So everybody in our office, when coming to the office, going to this platform, and then whatever we are doing, sending messages, receiving, analyzing, making payments, it's everything, even authorizing requisition, everything done by computers.
Okay, I'm sorry, we don't have time. We've overrun, and those waiting for the tanker panel are going to get fidgeting. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention. I'd like to thank Andreas and Yuri for joining me, and I hope you now know a little bit more about optimizing costs. Thank you. Thank you.